Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. What number have we got? Some? Yes, that's good. That's close. What's next? 32. Okay, good. Thank you. Thereupon, Lord Boar killed the demon within the water, just as a lion kills an elephant. The cheeks and tongue of the Lord became smeared with the blood of the demon. Just as an elephant becomes reddish from digging in the purple earth. Text 33. Tamala nilam sita danta kutya kshmam utshipantam kajalila yanga pragyaya padhan jalayonu vakair virinchi mukya upatasturi sham. Then the Lord, playing like an elephant, suspended the earth on the edge of his curved white tusks. He assumed a bluish complexion like that of a tamal tree, and thus the sages headed by Brahma could understand him to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead and offered respectful obeisances under the Lord. Could somebody do me a favour and get a tissue from the paraphernalia, please? Or up here, great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay. Vishaya u chuhu jitam jitam te jita yagya bhavana trayim tanum swam paridhunvate namaha yadro magarateshu nililyuru ad hayas tasmai namakarana sukarayate. All the sages uttered with great respect. What's the word that represents here? Great respect. Namaha. Yeah, namaha. What does namaha literally mean?
Not me.
Not me. Not me, but who? If it's not me, then who? Krishna. Yeah. Namaha. Jitam, jitam. All the sages uttered with great respect, O unconquerable enjoyer of all sacrifices, jitam jitam te jita. All victory, jita, means the conquerable, or the conqueror, shall we say. Ajita means unconquerable. O unconquerable enjoyer of all sacrifices, Yajna Bhavana. All glories and all victory unto you. You are moving in your form of the personified Vedas. And in the hair holes of your body, the oceans are submerged. For certain reasons, to uplift the earth, you have now assumed the form of a boar. Purport. The Lord can assume any form he likes. And in all circumstances, he is the cause of all causes. Since his form is transcendental, he is always the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as he is in the causal ocean in the form of Mahavishnu. Innumerable universes generate from the holes of his bodily hairs. And thus, his transcendental body is the Vedas personified. He is the enjoyer of all sacrifices. That's Yajna Bhavana. Yajna Bhavana. Yeah, we'll come back to that. He is the enjoyer of all sacrifices, and he is the unconquerable Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is never to be misunderstood to be other than the Supreme Lord because of his assuming the form of a boar to lift the earth. That is a clear understanding of sages and great personalities like Brahma and other residents of the higher planetary systems. Om Agyanatimirandasya. Jnanjana salakaya chakshurun militam jena tasmai sri gurave namaha sri chaitanya mano bhishtam stapitam jena bhutale svayam rupa kadamahiyam tadati svapadantikam mukam karoti vachalam pangum langayate karim yat kripa tamaham mande sri gurum dinatarinam. Jitam jitam te jita. So the rishis are speaking. Rishaya uchuhu. And Prabhupada translates this as the glorified sages uttered. So the rishis describing the qualities of the personality of Godhead are not ordinary persons. Maschita matkita prana bodayanta parasparam bodayantascha mamnityam tusyanticha ramanticha. Maschita, those who think of me. Maschita matkita prana, those who dedicate their lives to serving Krishna. One of their symptoms is katayantascha mam nityam. They like to glorify the Lord. Glorify the Lord. Tusyanti cha ramanti cha. They get great satisfaction and pleasure from describing the pastimes. What is it? Madhurya lila guna rupa nam nam. They derive satisfaction and bliss, happiness, from describing the name, qualities, form, and pastimes of the Lord. And they are able to recognize the Lord and his magnanimity in all circumstances. They're not bewildered by the various manifestations that the Lord appears in. And they're not bewildered by the things that he does. And they appreciate his unique qualities and his diverse manifestations and his equally diverse activities. You know, usually when we see a hog, we're repulsed. If you've ever seen the hogs in Vrindavan or Govardhan, you know, a hog is kind of an... What's a hog an emblem of? Gluttony and filth. Yeah, gluttony. You know, the hog is known for eating stool. Svidbujamye, isn't it? The stool eaters. Hog is a stool eater. So it's easy to be bewildered by the form of the Lord and the activities of the Lord. You know, generally people like to think of God, or, you know, God is good, right? God is peace and love, right? You know, the God that we worship, he's killing, you know, half a dozen demons before lunchtime every day. Right? The Bhagavad Gita, which is supposed to be the message of love and peace, is spoken on a battlefield. And basically, Krishna's encouraging Arjuna to go and rip up the enemy. Right? So it's not easy. Well, it's easy to misconstrue or misunderstand the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When you think about it here, because there's a description here of Lord Bor killing the demon within the water, just as a lion kills an elephant. Right. So how does a lion kill an elephant? When you think about it. How does a lion kill an elephant? Yeah, and then what does he do? Yeah. Maybe. How does a lion kill an elephant? How does a lion kill anything?
Choking.
With what?
Grabs the neck.
Yeah, and just mauls it. Right? Chews it. And that's why it's described here, the cheeks, because previously he was fighting him and they were fighting with clubs. Right? But that's not how he killed him. Meditate on this, right? Well, that's what I was doing before. And we all were, I suppose. He killed the demon within the water just as a lion kills an elephant. The cheeks and tongue of the Lord became smeared with the blood of the demon. That means he was chewing him. Well, that's horrible, isn't it? Ordinarily we would think, ooh, ooh. But the devotees glorify the Lord for such activities. Just as, and so, just as an elephant becomes reddish from digging in the purple earth. So it's very graphic, right? And then, after he's killed Hiranyaksha, right? Yeah. Then playing like an elephant suspends the earth on the edge of his curved white tusks. So how big is he? Right? If he's got the earth, which is so big, but it's just suspended on the tip of his tusks. He assumed a bluish complexion. What was his colour before? What is the colour of Varaha? Brown? Red? Does anybody know conclusively? Huh?
Red and white.
Red and white. I thought white. Predominantly white. Yeah. So, the same personality or two different people? Two different. There we go. Red and white. You know, sometimes, you know, you see the hogs and they have that orangey kind of a tinge to them. You know, you see it also in Indian men sometimes and women. Their hair goes all red. Have you noticed that? You don't see it in Australia so much. That kind of red. You know what I mean? Henna. Lord Varaha is not going to wear henna. Is it henna? Those people who walk around, they've got red hair, is henna? Oh, okay. I always thought, that's funny. And usually the hair's all, you know, very, very, they've paid a lot of attention to their hair. Yeah. So, he's red, but he assumes a bluish complexion. And so then, the sages, headed by Brahma, could understand him to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so then they're offering their prayers. And they're appreciating the fact that he is unconquerable. Whatever form he appears in, you know, we see it when Krishna appears as a little child and Putana came to poison him. And the Bhagavatam describes how Krishna is like the embers of a fire that are covered by ash. Right? You know how a fire, you can have a really big bonfire, and then when the fire's died down, it appears to have gone out. Right? You have the grey ashes, but then underneath, there's still burning, there's still glowing, you know, embers, large chunks of hot wood, which is still, you know, it has a full potency of the fire. So if you step on it, then you're going to get burnt. You can't see it, but it's lying under the ashes. So Krishna is described like that, just as a fire may be covered by ash, it still has the same potency as the blazing fire. And so if you know, Krishna, he appears like a child. And so it looks like he has no, you know, a child has no power, no potency, just a baby. Nobody is scared of a baby. Right? Nobody's scared of a baby. But Krishna in the form of a baby, just because his form is covered by apparently small size and he looks like a cute, cuddly little child, he still has the same potency and the same power that he manifests, say here, in the form of a boar killing Hiranyaksha. And so one shouldn't be misled, or one shouldn't be confused or bewildered by whichever of the forms the Lord assumes and the type of pastimes that he performs. He always remains, as is mentioned here, jitam, jitam, te, jita. Unconquerable. Always victorious. Even if it appears sometimes, even if there appears sometimes a setback. In the Lord's pastimes, in the Lord's scheme of things, is just a temporary situation to enhance, further enhance the lila or the performance of pastimes. So he's always unconquerable, regardless of what kind of a form he appears in. Next quality it's described here is yajna bhavana. Enjoyer of all sacrifices, and in the word for word it says yajna bhavana, one who is understood by performance of sacrifice. This is one of the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita. One of the duties of the administrators, one of the duties of the kings, is to see that the residents are performing yajna or sacrifice. And yajna and sacrifice means for the worship of the Lord. If you want a peaceful society, then it's recommended that all of the citizens should be engaged in some form of sacrifice. Offering of the results of our activities, offering the activities themselves for the pleasure of Krishna. You know, one of the interesting things about Bali is it actually a very peaceful place. Anybody here been to Bali? Everybody's doing some kind of sacrifice, right? They're appeasing the demigods, they're appeasing the Buddhas, Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva. They're offering something to someone all of the time, practically speaking, certainly in the morning. And it's interesting that it's a very peaceful place. You notice it, you feel it. If you're there for some time, you feel the special place. That's because people are doing sacrifice all the time. Of course, it's a bit wonky. You know, it's not exactly. And you know, sometimes we might doubt when Prabhupada says, you know, if everybody chants Hare Krishna, then we'll live in a peaceful situation. But you can see it in that environment. You can feel it. So imagine if everybody's performing jagya or sacrifice. This is actually the duty of the kshatriyas or the kings to see that everybody's performing some form of jagya. Ideally, that jagya should be jagyai sankitan prayer yujantihi sumedha saha. Right? For this day and age, it's the sankirtan jagya. That's all people need to be doing. That's the sacrifice for this age is the performance of the sankirtan jagya. And if everybody's performing that jagya, then we'll be living in a very, very peaceful and harmonious environment. We see it amongst the devotees. Where the devotees are sincerely and dedicatedly performing the sankirtan jagya, then there's harmony, cooperation, appreciation, there's a peaceful environment. It's like people comment when they come to the temple. You know, people who've come to the temple for the first time and they're awestruck by the atmosphere that they feel and experience in the temple. Especially when they're not at all aware of what they're about to experience. And then they come into the temple room and they see the deities and they're awestruck. Because the performance of the sankirtan jagya, the worship of the deities, the worship of the deities is part of that sankirtan jagya. You know, sometimes we think sankirtan is just we all go out and chant Hare Krishna. And certainly it is. But the sankirtan jagya that's presented by Lord Chaitanya, the spearhead, if you like, is the sankirtan party. But behind the sankirtan party are so many other supportive elements, right? Which are part of the sankirtan jagya. Just like now, we're performing the sankirtan jagya here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. We're performing the sankirtan jagya by worshipping the deity, which is an integral part of the practice of chanting Hare Krishna. Prabhupada says the Pancharatriki Vidhi and the Bhagavat Vidhi, they're like two railway tracks that keep the train. You know, you can't run a train on one railway track. Right? Monorail. Okay, maybe. Maybe, but that's not the example that Prabhupada gives. Prabhupada doesn't talk about a monorail. He talks about two railway tracks. Even on a monorail, there'll be two wheels and two sides of the track. Right? Take away one side or take away one of the wheels and it'll fall over. Right? So the point being, there needs to be a balance. And so therefore we have the deity worship. You know, Srila Prabhupada went to such great lengths to establish temples, sizable temples, with big deity worship all over the world. Right? Even though he says, or he quotes Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion, where he says, you know, a guru shouldn't endeavour too much to build temples. Right? He warns against it. You know, a lot of endeavour to establish a temple. Isn't it? A lot of endeavour to establish a temple. Forget about establishing it. How about maintaining it? Right? You know, sometimes devotees think, yes, we should have another temple in Melbourne. Huh? Yeah, sure. You and whose army? Huh? Steal all of the resources from this temple and take it somewhere else. That's what it'd be. That's what they mean, actually. We want to move the temple from Albert Park to Point Cook. Just as an example. A random example. But when people come into the temple and into the association of the devotees, they feel the atmosphere is different. Matthew Guy is a good example, the leader of the opposition at the moment in the state parliament. When he came, he couldn't stop talking about how much he liked the place. And I was thinking, is this guy for real, or is he just a very astute politician? Right? But then the next time he came, he said the same thing. And how much he really... And he's not the only one, in my experience. I've told this story before about an Anglican priest that came for an interfaith meeting that we had here. And he said to me, he said, that's the first vegetarian meal I've ever had. He said, that was really good. Right? And then he said, there's a special atmosphere here that I felt when I go to the temples in Asia. And he mentioned like Angkor Wat. You know, and Angkor Wat is... I don't think there's any worship going on in Angkor Wat now, right? No?
Yeah, tourist.
Tourist. There's a worship of the dollar, right? Yeah. But, you know, there's a lot of sacrifices being performed in that place, so there's still the remnant of the experience is still pervades the place, right? Just the way it's been constructed. Basically, it's been constructed according to Vastu principles, and so the potency, it still has potency as to other places where, like I said, in Bali, there's that feeling, you feel that, there's that presence. We're accustomed to it. Right? We're accustomed to it. And so we come into the temple and, you know, when we look around, we think, oh, you know, we're too familiar. Right? Sometimes we're too familiar. And sometimes not. You know, we really look forward to coming to the temple. I remember when we would go out every day selling paraphernalia. And so you'd have a day, 5, 6, 7 hours of just fighting it out with the Garmies. Huh? Remember that, Gowna? Out, you know, just selling candles or selling paintings or whatever. And it was a struggle. Right? You've got to struggle with your own mind and senses, and then with a whole bunch of other people's as well. And that's a struggle. Huh? So by the end of the day, you're looking forward to coming home. And when you drive in the back gate of the temple, it was a relief. It was a big relief. You could take off your wig. That's the other. That was another struggle. You know, the wig is on your head. Felt like you had your head in a vice. Why did we do that? People must have thought, well, you know, people used to think we were really odd. We got bald heads, but we walk around with wigs on. What's wrong with us? But anyway, it was a relief, such a relief to come back into the temple. And as soon as you drive in the back gate, then you feel we've left the material world, right? And we've entered into the spiritual realm, where Krishna is the centre. Krishna is the centre for the sages, the demigods, the rishis. Krishna is the centre. So when we come into the temple, the Sankirtan Jagya puts Krishna in the centre. Prabhupada gives the example, you know, when Krishna's in the centre, it's like throwing rocks in a lake into the same place, and then the waves that come out from that central point, they're all concentric. And so there's no clash. There's harmony. If you throw rocks in the lake in all different places, then the waves all crash and you get discordance. There's not that harmonious set of relationships. And that's the material world. Central point is not Krishna. Central point is my selfishness. And then as a consequence, then there's disharmony. There's clashing of interest, clashing of self-interests, selfishness, if you like. So when Krishna is the central point of attention, of focus and attention, and everybody is focused on serving, as we are in the Sankirtan Jagya, or the Sankirtan movement, then by the performance of that Jagya, then Krishna is appreciated by the devotees. And the devotees are also then able and capable of working together cooperatively. That's the hallmark of Krishna consciousness, actually. Because that means the devotees are rising above the Kanishta platform. Kanishta means, you know, more or less a selfish devotee, actually. Kanishta means selfish. And selfishness means, you know, thinking about themselves. And I'm the best devotee. But Madhyamadhikari puts aside the selfishness, and one of the key characteristics of a Madhyam Bhakta is that they make friends with the devotees. The key characteristic. And making friends with the devotees means putting Krishna in the centre. Right? Krishna's needs come first, because the devotee knows also that I'll be looked after. If I look after Krishna, okay, there may be some inconvenience. And there will be inconvenience. In order to perform the Sankirtan Jagya. You know, Krishna's pastimes reveal to us that even for the Supreme Lord, there's inconvenience. Right? There's always some demon coming along wanting to disturb everything. Is that right? In this case, you know, Hiranyaksha, he took birth with it, along with his brother, specifically to create trouble for Lord Vishnu. And in fact, he did it on Lord Vishnu's encouragement. When you think about it, isn't that interesting? Huh? This is actually an arrangement of Krishna to create trouble for Krishna. That's odd, isn't it? It's kind of weird. But no, it enhances his pastimes. Right? This enhances the part, and it enhances the relationship between the Lord and the devotees. You know, if life was just a bed of roses, right, then we wouldn't need to do anything. We'd just become lazy and take it easy. Right? Of course, we want everything to be easy. We're praying to Krishna, oh, Krishna, please make it easy for me. Huh? But beware, Krishna will not make it easy for you. In fact, Krishna may even make it tougher for you. Right? Now, does that mean that Krishna doesn't like you? Huh? If Krishna makes things tougher, he does so because that's actually good for us, believe it or not. Right? When you go to, how many of you are students? Quite a few, okay. We're all students. Students in the school of life, right? So, you know, we're going to be trained. We're going to be tested, right? To see how, you know, what good qualities we have or even what bad qualities we have. We like to think, you know, Kanishtha Adhikari thinks, yeah, I'm perfect. I'm the best devotee. Everybody should worship me and my guru. Right? Me and my guru are the best. This is the mood of a Kanishtha Adhikari. Right? But then Krishna reveals, you know, to us, when we're in that kind of a mentality, that we've got faults. The Kanishtha Adhikari tends to ignore them, but a Madhyama Adhikari takes note of the tests, of the examinations, and of the questions that he fails, or the tests, the items that we fail in. And as a consequence, then becomes humble. Like this is a sign of a devotee who's making advancement, is some humility. You know, along with that humility comes then also appreciation of others. Rather than thinking, you know, I'm the best devotee, or me and my god brothers, we're all the best devotees. Right? Do I think like that sometimes? You know, it's me and my god family. Forgetting that actually we're all in the same God family and Prabhupada's our Godfather, if you like. That's actually our family. But as a devotee makes progress or makes advancement, then their appreciation of themselves becomes more realistic and smaller, right? And their appreciation of others becomes realistic and greater. Right? They appreciate the qualities of devotion that are in others. You know, I remember when one of my first a significant realization that I had was that, because I used to think everybody who came to the Sunday feast was a bit of a bother. Right? Because they weren't surrendering to Krishna. And I would think, well, you're coming to the temple, you're chanting Hare Krishna, you're seeing the deities, you're hearing the philosophy, how come you're not surrendering like me? The advanced devotee like me. And I used to think, oh, all these karmis coming to the temple, making life hard for me because I used to have to serve out and clean up, right, after everybody. And so I used to, actually there was one devotee who used to tell people, he used to stand at the front gate and tell people to go away if the Sunday feast was good. Go away, we don't want you here. He wanted to eat the Sunday feast for himself. So tell people to go away. Right. So I used to think in that kind of a way, these people coming to the temple for the Sunday feast, oh, what a pain. Right. We've got to feed them, clean up their mess, look after them, and they're not even devotees. Right. This is my kind of mentality. That's a Kanishtha Adhikari. I'm the best devotee and everybody else is out of it. But then after a while I realised actually, well, it wasn't so long ago that I was one of those people. Huh? And, actually anybody who comes to the temple, anybody, is a special person. Because their trip or their travel to the temple has been arranged and ordained by Krishna. And Krishna is welcoming them, because, this is how we should see things. Krishna is welcoming them to his house. I was thinking I was the proprietor of the house, but actually the temple is Krishna's house. And every week or every weekend, he is encouraging, ultimately he's inviting everybody to come to his house. Just like Prabhupada said, famously said, let every hungry man of Melbourne come and eat. Right? And this is Prabhupada's, Prabhupada is Krishna's representative. And so that's Krishna's mood. And so anybody who comes is actually one of Krishna's guests and so should therefore be treated accordingly with respect and with a smile, not with a, go away, go away. No feast today. We ate it all. Mind you, in one sense, the feasts were a lot better then than they are now. Korma would have a team of 10 brahmacharis in the kitchen all morning. And we'd be cooking, special preparations. I remember one time we did stuffed puris. Now, you won't get stuffed puris at the Sunday feast these days. Not when there's 600 people coming. Could you imagine? You'd have to make 2 or 3 each per person for a start. So what's that? That's nearly 2,000 stuffed puris you'd have to make. That means all of us would be in the kitchen all day tomorrow, right? Cooking for the guests. But that was the equivalent of what we were doing. So the feast was pretty, it was pretty special. In fact, what we eventually did was to keep, grumbling brahmacharis like me happy, was we were allowed to set everything up, have everything ready to serve out, but we'd do that then half an hour before the feast was served, and then we were allowed to go upstairs and have prasadam ourselves. Right? So then we would feed the guests with a peaceful mind. Otherwise we'd be, what do you want? We would get to the last stuffed puri and we'd be thinking, you can't have that. That's mine. I remember serving breakfast. I used to have to serve breakfast. And, you serve that at the maha and your plate would be last. And there'd be, one burfi left on the plate and one devotee left to serve before you got your own plate. And so you'd be thinking, Krishna, don't let him take the burfi. Or you'd be kind of thinking like that, but you'd be trying to restrain it. It's okay, Prabhu, you can have the last burfi, it's all right. If you take the last burfi, I'll take that as Krishna's arrangement. So, you know, I guess Kanishtha Adhikari tends to be, they want to serve themselves, whereas a Madhyam Adhikari wants to serve others. And so that's a symptom of maturity. When there's a selfish kind of a mentality, then there'll be a clash. But the symptom, a symptom of a preaching community and of an Madhyam Adhikari Sangha is where the devotees work cooperatively. And of course, when that service to the Lord is manifest, then it's a peaceful atmosphere. And people notice it. People notice it. And that's what it says here. Yajna Bhavana. One who is understood by performances of sacrifice. Something, you know, something that's an element that's intrinsic, part of the Sankirtan Jagya. Part of the deity worship, part of the prasadam distribution. You know, on a whole, people in general are not very philosophical. On the whole, people are not philosophical. Especially in Australia, they want to be entertained. Right? What do people do on the weekend in Australia? They go to the footy. Right? Why? For entertainment. Purely for entertainment. Huh? And so, you know, when people come to the temple, they're not necessarily interested in philosophy. Of course, current devotees accept it. But we're an exception. We're exceptions that prove the rule. Right? How many people are there in Melbourne, and how many people attending a philosophical discourse at 7 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday morning? Right? Not many people. Not many people at all. And so therefore, you know, prasadam distribution is important, because through prasadam, people's consciousness will be purified. Also, right? People's consciousness is purified by hearing, of course, hearing and chanting. But people don't like to do that. Especially when they hear, you know, if a devotee tells them, you know, God's not going to make your life easy, he's going to make your life tough. They don't want to hear that. Right? They want to be told how life is going to be easy for them. And in fact, actually, you know, it's often distress that is the making of a devotee, isn't it? Often distress is the making of a devotee. When everything is nice and easy, then who cares about surrender? Right? This is why, you know, the devotees will be tested. Krishna will test. Then why there will be difficulties. But when the Sankirtan Jagya is performed, and when the prasadam is distributed, especially in Australia, we see it, prasadam distribution is integral to our preaching, so that we can make friends with people and make them amenable to the message. Otherwise they won't listen, they won't be inclined to hear. So the Sankirtan Jagya for us is very much bundled, or shall we say, an integral part of our communicating with the particular audience that we have is through prasadam distribution. Right? And Prabhupada understood that. And so he said, let every hungry man of Melbourne come and eat. Huh? Prabhupada understood the mentality of the people. And so therefore, you know, kirtan, festivals, prasadam distribution, that was what Prabhupada emphasized. I mentioned this before, so, you know, Prabhupada asked Balaram, you know, what were the two questions that Prabhupada asked Balaram about the temple?
Can you maintain the three-man artis?
Isn't that interesting? Prabhupada wanted the deity worship maintained. And he said, can you maintain the Sunday feast, the prasadam distribution? Right? He didn't say, are you going to distribute more books? Not that Prabhupada didn't, not emphasise book distribution. But it's interesting, here in Melbourne, he didn't ask about the book distribution, but he asked about the deity worship and the preaching. So this is all part of our jagya, if you like. Maintaining a temple, maintaining the deity worship, maintaining the atmosphere of cooperation that will strike people, that will affect people's hearts. And it's interesting, isn't it? You know, we think of preaching as, oh, I've got to go, you know, push the philosophy down somebody's throat. Huh? But that's not necessarily, that can be just a simple, that can be a sign of fanaticism, actually. Can be, not always, obviously, but can be. Whereas just giving people good association can change the hearts of persons. It's not, it doesn't necessarily have to be. And in fact, our message is best supported by good behaviour. You know, you may have the perfect philosophy, but if you behave obnoxiously, what's the point? Huh? But if you have the best philosophy and the best behaviour, right? The behaviour that supports the best philosophy is the best behaviour, then you have more than a fighting chance of changing the minds and the hearts of the people that you associate with. So it's interesting. You are, next qualification, you are moving in your form of the personified Vedas. Right, so that, you know, the form of the personified Vedas is good behaviour. What is it? Mahajana Jena Katasa Panta. The philosophy and practice of devotional service is not easy to understand. But it is understood in studying the mood, the behaviour, the activities of the previous acharyas and following in their footsteps. Mahajana Jena Katasa Panta. This is the path of perfection. It's following in the footsteps of the previous saintly persons. And just so you don't get me wrong, that doesn't mean that we don't preach, but that doesn't mean that we don't say anything. But we should back up what we say by that good behaviour. You know, another thing that that we did, I think it was me and Pushpanjali, we went to, you know, these high-rise housing apartments. We went there to distribute books one day, and there were all these brochures in the letterboxes that was making it difficult to put the books in the letterboxes. So we just pulled them out and threw them on the floor. Then put our books in there. I don't know what we were thinking. This is, you know, 24-year-olds got no brains, right?
So, you know, then Balaram calls me up to the office the next day and he says, "Well, where were you doing book distribution yesterday?" Because he already knew, and I told him. He says, "Oh, okay." He said, "You know, what gave you the bright idea to pull all of the advertising material out of the letterboxes and just throw it on the floor?" Because we were thinking, "Ah, this Kami rubbish, you know, getting in the way of our preaching." Right? So then we just make a mess in their foyer and leave our calling card. Right? And so they're going to be thinking, "Who are these Hare Krishnas anyway?" Huh? So, you know, our behaviour we should model the philosophy that we preach. What is it? What do they call it? Practice what you preach in order to have an effect on people. If we want to have an effect, sometimes, what do they say? A man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. Right, so we may have philosophically trounced somebody, but he just goes away thinking, this. And people did actually. You know, they used to, people that we have since made friends with have said, "You know, I knew that you never got into an argument with a Hare Krishna on the street doing book distribution. You never got into an argument because you could never defeat them. Hare Krishnas are indefatigable and undefeatable." But that doesn't mean that, you know, they respected. Well, they did respect us, but they kept clear. They steered clear of us. So, Lord Varaha, you know, even in the form of a boar. Now, ordinarily, a boar is, and in fact, you know what boar, B-O-R-E. Stands for, you know what a bore is, B-O-R-E, boring person, yeah, boring person, a bore, oh, he's such a bore, means, you know, he's so full of himself that nobody wants to talk to him, because he's boring, a different kind of a bore, but again, illustrating this point of good behaviour, even though Lord Varaha appears in the form of a bore, and a bore is generally avoided, right? You don't go and embrace a bore. Right? Nobody does. You steer clear of it. But even when the Lord appears in the form of a bore, he's still the personification of the Vedas, and so therefore is to be glorified, is to be appreciated, is to be served, is to... He still acts as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, despite the fact that he's taken on this external, this apparent manifestation of someone or somebody who would be avoided or, given a wide berth. Right? It doesn't matter when the Lord appears. It doesn't matter what form he takes. He's still the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is therefore then impeccable in his choices, in his tastes, in his actions, in his deeds. Because regardless of what form he takes, he is acting for the best interests of everybody. And we see that in this particular case. The reason why he took the form of a boar was because his service at that time was to extract the earth out of the nether regions of the universe. So it's kind of like the earth had fallen into the sewage system at the bottom of the universe, and so therefore it was appropriate for him to take on the form of a boar to scoop up the earth out of that filthy place. And so in that way, then he's the personification of the Vedas. You know, what is it? Jyotirgama, Tamasi Ma, Jyotirgama. Come out of the darkness and come to the light. And that's the purpose of the Vedic instructions, is to bring us out of ignorance and put us into the light of transcendental knowledge. And that's what the activities of the Lord are meant to illustrate. So his acceptance of the form of a boar is to extract the earth out of a filthy place and reinstate it into its proper position. And, that, and of course that's our mission also. Take the residents of earth out of that place of ignorance or that place of darkness where they're unaware of who they are and what they should be doing. And it's our job to bring them out of that ignorance and bring them into the light of transcendental devotional service. That's the purpose of the Sankirtan Jagya or the Sankirtan mission. Alright, there's more, I could say more here, but better not. It's 9:05. Does anybody have any comments or questions?
From the earlier reading about how Arahadeva appeared to beginning or thought of the Garbhodaka ocean, where it was submerged. So, Prabhupada writes in one of the purports that there are two kalpas in which this had happened. In one of the kalpas, the earth was inundated and that is why it went down. And in one of the kalpas, Hiranyaksha plunged the earth down into the ocean. So,
yeah.
I was wondering that. The creation has just begun, and from Brahma's mind, I think Swayambhu Amunu, Manu, and Shakyarupa are born, and then Lord Varahadeva appears. Swayambhu Amunu asks Brahma, what is my duty? And then he sees that the earth is submerged. So, how is it that Hiranyaksha is already born? Because we see that Kashyapa Muni, Diti approaches Kashyapa Muni saying that my sister Aditi has produced all these demigods, so I also want children. So, how is it that.
So, that should have happened later.
Yeah, I can't understand the sequence, how Hiranyaksha is already born and submerged the earth into the ocean.
Well, if you can't understand it, then I might have trouble too. Well, I guess that's perhaps why Prabhupada mentions that it's a story coming from a different kalpa, and so therefore the sequence is different. What I suggest you do is study it further, and then when you find the conclusion, let us all know. Yeah. You know, you could ask Bhakti Vijayapurna Maharaj or one of his students, and I'm sure you'll get an answer that makes sense. For me, it would be, I don't know, total speculation if I was to make a comment on it, to be honest. But look, most of these apparent contradictions can be resolved by a proper understanding of the history and the sequence, and you need to get that from an expert. Anything else? Theoretical at this point in time.
course. No, look, that's all a given. But we have to understand, or we should, my point is, and that's what we'll do, eventually we'll do that. But it has to be done very, very carefully and with a consideration of how much effort is required to maintain what we have here. Right? And that this didn't happen overnight. And if we're to produce the same quality of a temple, we need double the resources. Right? There's at least a dozen pujaris required to worship these deities on a weekly basis. Right? A dozen devotees. If you're going to have, you know, what's Prabhupada's standard for a temple? What's Prabhupada's, you know, paka standard for a temple in terms of worship? Which deities do you worship? Who can say? Who's sitting on the first altar? Gornita, yeah, or Panchatattva. Maipur, Navadvip, Dham. Who's in the middle?
Mahaprabhu.
Mahaprabhu. Radha Krishna. Radha Krishna. Or Krishna Balaram. But the Vrindavan temple is pretty unique. The standard that Prabhupada set around the world is Radha Krishna. And then who's on the third altar? Jagannath Balaram Subhadra. Right? So, okay, we could just have a Radha Krishna temple. Right? But that's not... Prabhupada's standard is three altars. Right? So, if we're to have another temple at that level of worship, right, then that means at least a dozen pujaris need to be maintained. Right? So, a dozen brahmacharis? Is that conceivable? Maybe. Where are they going to come from? Dhaka? We'll sponsor them to come from India. Huh? And that's how we'll maintain our worship. Right? But then when they get PR, what are they going to want to do? Right? So where are the pujaris going to come from? And if they're... It's inconceivable, or it's impractical, or it's unlikely that they're all going to be brahmacharis. Homegrown brahmacharis, right? So that means they're going to be householders. Right? What does householders mean? Just like we have here. What does householders mean? What was that? Sorry? That's a given, but what else does householders mean?
They will have their own.
Well, money it means. Money. Right, you know, if you've got householder pujaris, which we have, and we have very good pujaris, you have to maintain them. Right? They'll have a family, so you have to provide them with a house. You've got to feed them. Their children need to go to school. Just like here. You know, we've got householders. And we're living in Albert Park. This is, you know, one of the most expensive suburbs in Australia to live in. So it costs money to look after householders. So, you know, my point being that if we're to establish another temple of the same calibre as this one, right, then we have to understand then the responsibilities that come with doing that at that level of service. Right? This temple spends on average per week $50,000. Right? Mind you, that's with a couple of restaurants plus the farm.
And that's an expense, a significant expense. The farm is a significant cost for us. So that wouldn't be that. But still, you know, you'd be looking at, say, $30,000 a week that you'd have to maintain this, a standard of deity worship and a temple, flowers, boga. You know, look, we distribute, say, 1,500 to 2,000 free meals a week, right? So a temple to do this, to do the same, then just... We need to realistically understand the implications of doing that. Right? It's easy to think, yeah, we should have another temple, benefit everybody. But the implication, you know, it's like the tip of the iceberg is seeing the deities. But underneath, all of the support systems that go to worshipping the deity and doing all... And prasadam distribution is actually part of deity worship, right? That's because that's where the prasadam comes from. It comes from offering it to Radha Ballabha. That's why it tastes so good, right? So that's why. Yes, it's a good idea, but we, in order to effectively do that, so that there isn't a fight over resources, has to be done in a very mature, methodical and deliberate fashion, right? And I know, you know, from my friend's experience in cities where there have been more than one temple established, the result was bitter fighting amongst the devotees over resources. The mood was to serve Krishna. Right? The mood, you know, the goal was to please Krishna. But in the end, because of the difficulties that arose, because of the lack of consideration of the resources that are actually required to maintain a temple of this size, created friction amongst the devotees, unfortunately. So that's why I bring up that point. It's from experience, knowing how much effort is required to maintain a temple of this size, to purchase the land. Okay, let's say what? How much? $1 million? Build the building, buy the deities, you know, just add another million, maybe more. Add a couple of million. Right? Then find the devotees. Where are the devotees going to come from? Who are going to sacrifice their lives just to maintain such a place? At least a dozen people. At least a dozen. You know, how many? We maintain 40 devotees in this community to provide all of the facility that we've got now. So a dozen is probably not enough. And then look after them, maintain them, keep them well fed, well housed, right, for the rest of their lives. Basically, that's what you've got to do. Hands up, who wants that job? Anybody here interested? You're interested. I don't think you're qualified. Because if you were interested and qualified, you probably wouldn't be putting your hand up. You'd be thinking, I don't know whether I want that job.
I'm not qualified, but I'm interested.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah. All right. Find another dozen or more people, but who are qualified. Because, you know, qualification is what we need. Interest, that's fine, but they've got to be qualified also. Is that right? Okay, there you go. Vajra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktavinoda ki jai, Lord Varaha ki jai, Hiranyaksha ki jai.